you can meet and hear Hank Hanegraaff, Hans Feeney, Scott Klusendorf, Craig Parton, Will Wheaton, Angus Manoogian, and Jonathan Fisk at the 2018 Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference, Friday, June 8th and Saturday, June 9th in Collinsville, Illinois. Collinsville is 15 miles east of St. Louis. Early bird registration is $110. For more information, visit issuesetc.org. The Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference, June 8th and 9th in Collinsville, Illinois.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. On this Thursday afternoon, June 7th, I'm going to talk about a pro-choice argument. Maybe arguments, maybe just assertions, who knows, made by Christian ethicist Rebecca Todd Peters in a book that, well, many will probably see as a new way of looking at the issue of abortion from a Christian ethicist who argues that women ought to be understood as free moral agents. They ought to be trusted with the decision to have an abortion. And we should not presume that abortion is morally wrong. And there are other things that she asserts as well. How do we respond to this? And what is the primary appeal of such an argument? Joining us to evaluate this argument, regular guest Scott Klusendorf, president of Life Training Institute, author of the book, The Case for Life, Equipping Christians to Engage the Culture. Scott, welcome back.
Good to be with you, Todd.
What do you think the primary appeal of Rebecca Todd Peters' argument is?
Well, I think it's relativism. People want to do their own thing. They want to believe they are the moral center of the universe when it comes to decisions regarding their own self-interest. And so they punt to relativism, and they make all morality an issue of personal choice. This is what Frank Beckwith and Greg Kochel term "I say relativism" in their book Relativism, Feet Firmly Planted in Midair. And "I say relativism" simply goes like this: who are you to judge me? Who are you to determine what's right for me? I am a sovereign moral agent, and no one has a right to question me. That's what's driving this.
Is Rebecca Todd Peters also, for lack of a better term, playing the gender card in her ethical assertions?
Well, yes, absolutely. But what I find so funny is, although she bases her case on relativism, she inevitably ends up making a ton of moral judgments. Men should respect women. The public should respect women. This is unreal. When she says, for example, that we should trust women to make their own health care decisions, that's a moral statement. That doesn't work in a relativistic worldview. If morals are relative, all she can say is she would prefer that we allow women to make these choices. But she doesn't. She really goes quite beyond that. And while we're at it, let's not let her get away with defining abortion as health care. Look, pregnancy is not a disease, and unborn children are not tumors. So abortion is not about health care. It's a moral question about, is it okay to intentionally kill an innocent human being? And the question, is the unborn a human being, is precisely the question she dodges in this piece.
Is she making arguments or mere assertions?
I would say mere assertions. So let's define the difference between the two. If I say Socrates is a man, all men are mortal, therefore Socrates is mortal, I've given you an argument. I've got a premise, conclusion. Now, that argument may be mistaken. It could be the case, for example, that the conclusion does not follow from the premises. Or it could be that my premises themselves are unsound. But you cannot deny that it's an argument. It is. How about this statement, though? Women have a right to choose. Or we should trust women to make their own personal decisions. Or women have a right to determine their own health care options. What are those statements? Well, they're not arguments. They're mere assertions. And we need to, as Christians, Todd, get out of the habit of assuming the burden of proof every time someone makes an assertion. Rather, we should simply ask, why would anyone believe a thing like that? Make them defend their own claims.
Okay, let's deal with a couple of the facets of her assertions, I think she would call them ethical arguments here. The first one beginning with the idea that women are being forced to justify their abortions, and that proceeds on the assumption that abortion is morally wrong, and that assumption is incorrect.
Well, she assumes it's morally right, so she doesn't get the high ground here. The reality is both sides need to advance their arguments. What I love is where she writes, in lieu of justification, women should be allowed to approach abortion because their ethic is rooted in reproductive justice. And my question is, reproductive justice for whom? She simply ignores the status of the unborn and simply assumes they are not one of us. And this problem comes up in virtually every paragraph in this piece.
It also says that when she addresses the moral status of the fetus, she says that's an ethical and theological question that should be asked and answered by women themselves, not by legislators or judges. I imagine she has a lot of people kind of politely clapping along with that one. It sounds great.
It does, but here's the problem. Notice it assumes that ethical and theological knowledge doesn't count as real knowledge. It's mere subjective opinion. And this is something we have seen philosophically, really going back to the Enlightenment, where you had this fact-value split where people began to think that the only thing that counted as real knowledge is what you could measure scientifically. If you can't see it, taste it, touch it, feel it, or hear it, it's not real. Everything other than what can be measured by the empirical senses gets punted into the category of subjective personal opinion. And since you can't empirically measure morals, they're not physical things, they're non-physical things, therefore morals, theology, those kinds of things all get thrown into the subjective category. And that's the premise she's operating from here. And my question to her would be, why should anybody suppose that theological and ethical knowledge doesn't count? And by the way, if it doesn't count, her own piece is discredited, because she's making largely a philosophical and theological case here.
She also says, and I think this is an attempt at kind of a greater good argument, that a woman's ability to control their fertility is a kind of unqualified moral good. Therefore, women ought to be able to control their fertility, even if it means aborting the unborn.
Well, nice circular argument there that she offers, but would she argue this way if a mother wanted to kill her two-year-old? What if the mother said, look, I didn't realize the trouble this two-year-old would be, and therefore, now that he is two, I'd like to eliminate my trouble by eliminating him. Well, of course she's not going to go for that. So the real question is not controlling fertility. The real issue is, what is the unborn? If the unborn are human, like that toddler, we don't kill them in the name of trusting women or controlling fertility any more than we'd kill a toddler for those reasons. And it's the question, what is the unborn, she doesn't want to grapple with.
She deals with the issue of when life begins. She says the theological belief that life begins at conception is not shared among all religions and was not even widely held by conservative Christians in the U.S. until the 20th century.
Yeah, this is a really vacuous argument. How does it follow that because people disagree, nobody's right? People once disagreed on slavery. They once disagreed on whether women should be allowed to vote. Does it follow there's no right answer? And by the way, if disagreement means nobody's right, her own case here is falsified because many people disagree with it. But the bigger problem here is, once again, notice how she couches the question, when does life begin? She paints it as a theological question. It's not. It's an empirical question based on the science of embryology. But because she's already established that theology and ethics fall into the subjective realm, it's very easy for her to now just assert that these must remain personal questions because, after all, nobody can say what's objectively true because there's so much disagreement. But this is a sleight of hand, Todd, because the question, when does life begin, has been settled by the science of embryology, and that science can be put in a sentence. From the earliest stages of development, the unborn, including the author of this piece, was a distinct, living, and whole human being. She wasn't part of another human being like skin cells on the back of my hand. She was already a whole living member of the human family, even though she had yet to grow and mature. If she can find a scientific case to refute what I just said, then I think she's got something. But until then, she's just begging the question, assuming what she's trying to prove.
Scott Klusendorf is our guest. He's president of Life Training Institute, author of the book, The Case for Life, Equipping Christians to Engage the Culture. Two more facets of Rebecca Todd Peters' ethical argument for abortion on the other side of the break.
The church's music from the 20th century. The 17th century. The 11th century. The 8th century. The 4th century. The best of the church's music from the past 2,000 years. LutheranPublicRadio.org.
Defending life from beginning to end. You're listening to Issues, Etc.
40 years greatly blessed is this year's theme at Metro East Lutheran High School in Edwardsville, Illinois. We engage young adults in a Christ-centered environment and provide an alternative to secular public high schools. Please help us provide tuition assistance to more students by making a special 40th anniversary tax-deductible gift at melhs.org and click on the giving page. Or call me, Dr. Jay Krause, principal, at 618-656-0043.
Have you ever wanted to better understand philosophy and its impact on your family, your church, or your world, but didn't know where to begin? Concordia University, Wisconsin has an innovative, free online course for you entitled Philosophy Kata Christan. These six engaging video sessions are taught by noted Lutheran philosopher, lecturer, author, and pastor, Dr. Gregory Scholz. Learn more by clicking the Kata Christan logo at issuesetc.org. Issuesetc.org. We're talking about a pro-choice argument made by Christian ethicist Rebecca Todd Peters. Scott Klusendorf is our guest. I'm Todd Wilkin. This is Issues Etc. Scott will also be at the Issues Etc. Making the Case conference this weekend. You'll have an opportunity to both meet and hear him. It's held right here in Collinsville, Illinois, 15 miles east of St. Louis. Scott will be making the case for life. Thanks to the Lutheran Church Extension Fund, childcare at the conference is free. You'll find a conference schedule, and you can still register at issuesetc.org or call 618-223-8385. The 2018 Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference, Friday, June 8th and Saturday, June 9th in Collinsville, Illinois. Scott, I don't know if you're familiar with the video that came out from, I think it's called Choice 42. These are remarkable and whimsical videos put out by a pro-life apologist, I guess I should call her. And one of the videos has to do with where you got your human rights, and she has the magical birth canal.
Yeah, I saw that. It was pretty funny.
It's very funny, and it gets to the argument beautifully. But here it is in the argument of Rebecca Todd Peters. I'll just read it for you. She doesn't like the word fetus or even unborn child. She right. proposes a term prenate based on the word prenatal, and she says, prenates, of course, are human, but even though they are human, they are not human in the same way that pregnant women are human beings. It's only through the physical process of birth that prenates cross the threshold into life. The status of the prenate is a fluid moral question that isn't properly addressed in the debates of our time. What is she saying, and how do you respond?
Well, first of all, notice it's a metaphysical statement. She just got done telling us that we should keep theology and personal moral views to ourselves, and we should trust women to make their own decisions, and yet here she is making one. She's saying that what gives us value as human beings is that we pass through the birth canal. That is an example of philosophical anthropology. In other words, she is answering the question, what makes humans valuable in the first place? And her answer, a magical journey of 7 or 8 inches down the birth canal. Now, she doesn't defend this. She presents no argument for why that change in location matters. She simply asserts it. But I think that the thing that just had me busting up reading through this piece is, for all her complaint about people bringing their own views to this, she goes on and makes absolute claims about what makes us valuable in the first place, and she just asserts her own opinion as if we ought to take it as gospel truth. It really is quite laughable.
She also says that, and here it is with her term, prenates. Prenates occupy a liminal space, both separate from and part of the pregnant woman, that defies categorization in a society obsessed with individualism. That was a fancy turn of phrase.
Well, boy, I talk about the law of non-contradiction, how A can be A and not A at the same time. There you go. But again, notice that the reason we're struggling with what she wrote here is, I've noticed that when people try to defend the indefensible, they often have to take a lot of words and they end up tripping over things. They can't just get right to the point and make their case. And so you get guys, even thoughtful guys, like David Boonin, who's probably written the best defense of abortion, though I don't agree with it, but he has to dice out so many categories to make his case float that by the time you're done, you're thinking, wait a minute, how do I make sense of all these distinctions and all these qualifications? And I think this is where the pro-life position is just so much clearer. Our case is so simple, Todd. It's wrong to intentionally kill innocent human beings. Abortion does that, therefore it's wrong. Now, right there, people can engage that syllogism. They can argue for it or against it, but you don't have to overqualify it. It's right there, it's clear, and I like the fact that clarity and simplicity go with our side.
Is there anything new in Rebecca Todd Peters' so-called ethical argument for abortion?
Nothing. I kept looking for it. She makes the same old mistakes that people have been making for 40 years. She says the Bible's silent on abortion, as if somehow an argument from silence gives permission. She makes the same old mistakes of saying, hey, we don't know when life begins. People disagree, therefore there's no right answer, which of course would invalidate her own position. These are mistakes that are old mistakes, and she just seems to be making them again. And I as I read this, Todd, I really wondered, to what degree has she interacted with people on her side of the issue? Forget the pro-life scholarship that's out there. I was just stunned thinking, isn't she aware that these arguments have been around for 40 years and have been discredited by pro-life apologists through the decades? And she seems oblivious to that.
Scott Klusendorf is president of Life Training Institute. He is author of the book, The Case for Life, Equipping Christians to Engage the Culture. You can purchase it and learn more about Life Training Institute at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Listen on Demand. Scott, looking forward to seeing you tomorrow or Saturday.
Yes, I'm looking forward to it. I'll arrive at the conference tomorrow night, and I hope a bunch of your listeners come out. I'd like to shake a lot of hands.
It'll be great. When we come back, it's hour 2 of Issues, Etc. on this Thursday afternoon. We're going to spend that hour with Dr. Carl Fikencher. We're going to be looking forward to Sunday morning, going to that section of the Gospel of Matthew where Jesus talks about blasphemy of the Holy Spirit and answers the question, who are my mother and brothers? We'll be right back.
Listen weekday afternoons to Pastor Todd Wilkin and guests on Issues, Etc. Issues, Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is vital for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our mailing address, Issues, Etc., P.O. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. You can also donate at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues Etc. is a production of LPR, Lutheran Public Radio.
Right now, many churches are planning their budgets for the next fiscal year. You can promote your confessional Lutheran church and support the worldwide outreach of Issues Etc. by joining our congregational sponsorship program, the Issues Etc. 300. We're looking for 300 congregations to include $1,000 in their mission or advertising budgets. You'll find an informational flyer on the support page at issuesetc.org. Don't miss your congregation's budget deadline, the Issues Etc. 300.
Cradled in historic Perry County, Missouri, the manger of the Missouri Synod, Emmanuel Lutheran Church at 453 Northwest Street in Perryville proclaims God's Word and celebrates His Supper on Saturdays at 5:30 and Sundays at 7:30 and 10 using the church's liturgy contained in Lutheran Service Book, enriched with ancient and modern hymns. For more information, call 573-547-8317 or visit www.emmanuel-perryville.org.